Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my daughter just texted me some emojis and I'm confused.
Can you describe them?
There's t-shirts, shorts, dollar signs, bunch of clapping hands.
She's saying go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, right now new summer styles are up to 50% off store-wide with tees from $6 for adults and $5 for kids and shorts from $12.
Up to 50% off?
Yes, plus all clearance styles are up to 75% off at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
Now that I understand, I'm going to Old Navy now.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 7/11 to 7/23, select styles only.
Blog Talk Radio.
And indeed, welcome to the show, folks. I'm Santuary Lee Jones. It is November 17th, 2012. We're edging ever closer to that infamous December 21st, 2012. So far, things have been somewhat calm. Today's show, we've got a really special show. It's scheduled for 2 hours. We will be interviewing Dr. Dorothy M. Niedermeyer. She's a PhD, and she specializes in past life regression. If you go to thunderstruckradio.com, there is a bio on her there. She specializes in past life regression. She's got several sites linked in here on her bio that are pretty interesting. One is Genesis Consultants. That's drdorothy.info. The next one is evliving.com. We have another one, drdorothy.net, and then allthingshealing.com. There's an article linked through on past life regression. It's a special show because Dr. Dorothy agreed to interview one of our guests. I don't know how many of y'all out there had listened to or remember the Halloween, the October 30th, we had Craig Sim Webb on, and we were taking phone calls, and one guest called in, and she was discussing her fear of fire and choking, and Craig had actually, you know, after we discussed several dream aspects involved with that, since she dreams of it, she apparently has a waking life issue with tight things around her neck or fire from her session with Dr. Dorothy. It sounds like she has almost like a OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder almost, to fire and tight things. But anyways, so we got back in touch with her after being on the show on October 30th, and we you know, got in touch with Dr. Dorothy Niedermeyer, who agreed to do a past life regression session with this guest. Her name's Shelley, I believe. It was really interesting listening to it. We did the past life regression last week, last Saturday, and so here's the show today with Dr. Dorothy, which I'll be calling here in a few minutes. I was just giving you all a little bit of background. I've got several clips of the actual past life regression. Most of them are there's a couple here that are longer, some of them are shorter. But anyways, so we're going to have Dr. Dorothy Niedermeyer go through point by point and explain to us what past life regression is, how it works, and so forth. So if y'all just hang tight, I'm going to throw on just some quick filler music, and that way I can get Dr. Dorothy on the phone, and we can go from there. So I hope y'all enjoy the show today, and we'll be right back, folks.
Introduce myself, I'm a man of wealth. and say I've been around for a long, long year. So many a man sold a faith. I was around when Jesus Christ had his moment of doubt and pain.
Okay, folks, that was fast. I got Dr. Dorothy on the phone, and she's doing well. So here we go. Hi, Doctor. How are you today?
I'm wonderful. And you?
I'm good. So today we're going to be discussing what we did last week, which was a past life regression with one of the show listeners. Will you fill us in? Before we get going on that, will you give us a little bit of background history about yourself, how you got into this profession, what your interests were in it?
Well, I was 7 years old when I was given a message out loud that I would be doing this kind of work. And at 7 years old, you don't really understand what that means. But as I continued to go to school and continued to work, hearing my guides give me messages, by the time I was a senior in high school, I understood what I would be doing for the rest of my career. And here I am today doing exactly what I was told to do. I don't know how to explain it any more clearly than that.
That's pretty clear. Fill us in a little bit on past life regression. I mean, does everyone have a past life? Is it something that everyone, is everyone reincarnated?
Well, that's a good question. There are some energies that do not become in body. They stay out of body, and they're guardian angels. And then there's others that, other angel energies that come back again and again with people. They may be in body, they may not be in body. And they come with us as we come back together with, as in soul groups. So somebody that you might have been married to once before may be your parent this time around. Or you may have been the parent and now they're the sibling. So there's all kinds of combinations on how souls go in body or they are angels.
How far below the surface, before we get into... I was listening last Saturday, and I've got several clips here lined up,
mm-hmm.
but I noticed a few things when we were doing the regression, and I don't know if it's actually one of the clips or not, but I noticed that when you put Shelley under hypnosis, I noticed it immediately, the tone of her voice, and it seemed like what I've heard her say, it almost sounded like the patterning of her speech had changed. And I guess it presents the question of, well, twofold. A, what is occurring there? And B, how far below your conscious mind are potentially your old consciousness, your the consciousness that you had beforehand?
Well, it depends. Each person is different. With some people, it may be way, way deep, and it's not easy to get to. Other people have what we call blip-throughs. It's actually flashbacks of a previous life. Memory comes through. Those deja vu moments that you have, it feels like you've been in this place before. You've talked to these people before. You've had this conversation before. Those are all snippets from a past life, and probably with those very souls that sitting in the room now, only in different bodies. And the relationship may be different. For example, I went to a professional meeting many years ago, and this man walked up to me, and he says, "Where have we met?" And I started looking at him, and I don't recognize him, and he insisted that he had met me somewhere. And I said, "No, I don't think so." And he gave me all the places that we could have met, and I'd never been there, but he was so sure that we had met before. And I said, "Well, I kind of teased him. I said, "Well, I'll do a regression and find out where we had a past life." He did not believe in past lives. And So I did do that. I went to a hypnotherapist that I knew, and we did a regression, and sure enough, he and I'd had a past life. He knew me very well. He was a friend of my husband in that past life. So he recognized me. I didn't recognize him. The interesting part of it, there was some similarities. He wanted to have an affair with me in the past life, and I refused. He never had gotten married in that past life. He hadn't gotten married in this life. He had blue eyes in that life. He had blue eyes in this life, and he was about the same height. So those are the kinds of similarities that we can run into. You may meet someone, and you just know you know them, but you don't know from where.
That's interesting. I'm going to just shoot from the cuff here. I'm going to play the first clip.
Okay.
I believe this is just prior to her being put under hypnosis. So here we go. It's about a minute long.
Okay. What issue is it that...
Excuse me?
That just went off.
Yeah, I started it and then I stopped. You said what issue?
Okay, I was going to say, what issue is it that you want to focus on?
I've got several clips here. Actually, I believe Bethany had actually gone over these with you. I'm not sure.
We've got
fear of burning, which is where this one starts off, which is, I believe this is just prior to her hypnosis. And we've got several others. I'll give you a heads up. Right when we fire them off. And
yes, she wanted to focus on the fact that she had the fear of fire, and she also had an issue with not being able to wear anything above the collarbone. Now, if anything touched above the collarbone, she couldn't wear it. And that is a clue that there could have been a hanging or being strangled. By someone putting their hand, putting a tight, like a Littiger across the neck, someone strangling somebody with their hands, and then as we went on into the past life, I directed her to go into the past life with regard to not having anything around her neck and fear of fire.
You know what's interesting? I'll play this clip in just a second. But I believe Bethany had followed up with her in emails, and after the past life regression, I've listened to it a couple times just because I found it. I want to use the word weird, but it was extremely interesting to hear it and just the answers that would come out of her. But apparently, from what I understand, she actually. Her fear of fire has actually lessened. In apparently one email, she was stating that she had actually left a candle burning, which this is apparently something that she could not do. Left
Correct.
A candle burning, and it was her husband that actually put it out. So,
Correct. And I did give her a healing message to her during the session so that she could hear that after the session was over. She would hear that reminder that... if she had a safety plan in place with regard to a candle, that everything would be okay, she could leave the room.
Apparently it worked.
And it worked.
Yeah.
Yes, it does work.
I'm amazed. Okay, so here's this first clip. We're going to play it just to give people an intro to the session.
What issue is it that...
What's that?
Okay, that was at the very beginning when I said to her, what issue is it that you want to focus on?
Yeah. I was just going to – let's play it, and then we'll just – yeah.
What issue is it that you want to focus on or get some resolution or understand?
I have an absolute fear of fire, and I have a fear of things around my neck. So I just wonder, and that's been with me since I was a baby. So when I talk
How
to Frank...
Okay, so fear of fire and things around your neck has been there since you could. How old were you when you first became aware of that?
Oh, probably 4 or 5.
And what was the first clue that you were afraid of fire and things around your neck?
I would just have nightmares about fire.
Okay.
About being burned.
What issue?
Wow. Okay, that was a short. I've got to apologize to you, Dorothy, and everyone out there, because it's so clear. I'm really amazed with the recording equipment, because it's so clear that I thought it was actually you asking me a question. But so explain what we just listened to. That was the lead-in to the actual session. That was beforehand you had a session of questions and answers trying to get filled in. What is the purpose there?
Before that, I had taken her personal history in this lifetime. And the reason I take a personal history in this lifetime is because there may be threads in this lifetime back to a previous life that she's struggling with that she may not know about. She may know that she has something in this life going on, but she doesn't know that they connect to a previous life. If I don't know that, if I don't have any history, then I wouldn't be able to say, okay, here's the thread from that lifetime back to this lifetime, or however you want to put it, at this lifetime. She has, not everyone has as specific an issue as she has, and that's why the history helps me to fill the gaps. But she had two things that were very prominent, and they were very young, between 4 and 5. In fact, this was an ideal past life regression. You could say it was almost a perfect past life regression where she got a lot of information in a very short period of time. In an hour and a half, we got the issue about the not being able to wear something above her collarbone and the fear of fire in one lifetime, plus then we got a second lifetime that was a apparently the following lifetime or the one just before this one, where there was unfinished business.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, when we go into past life regressions, in talking with Shelley on this subject, she said, I didn't really feel like I was in a trance, that the what she was saying was just somewhat coming to her. How does that work? I mean, if I did a past life regression, I could see myself being in the same shoes. I would feel like, yeah, I'm not really in a trance. So where are the answers coming from?
The answers are coming from the soul energy. The energy that's stored in the soul. The soul has energy. That's all the soul is energy. And it holds with it all experiences and all memory and all the feelings that go along with memories. And then it can blip up to the unconscious mind and then blip through to the conscious mind. So when someone is in a trance, it is allowing the person to focus very narrowly on what the information is that they want to find out about, versus when you're in your conscious mind only,
mm-hmm.
you're focusing on 900 things at once.
Right.
Because that's what the conscious mind does. But when you're in a trance, and as you know, you put yourself into a quote, hypnotic trance any number of times during the day. It could be 100, it could be 150. Because that's what your mind does. The word hypnosis is really just a label that we put on something that the mind already does. Really, it's the trance, not hypnosis, that's the key. I'm using a technique to put someone into a deeper trance than you could do on your own. And then I ask the questions, because it's when you go into a trance, unless you have meditated for years and years and years, you don't know what questions to ask yourself. And even then, when you are well practiced at meditating and being in a trance, you still don't know what questions to ask, because it's hard to be in two places at once, listening to the information that's coming through and knowing what question to ask. So that's where the practitioner comes in, is knowing what question to ask to lead the conversation to a deeper level or lead the conversation to go to the next. And I don't know if you have any clips that say this. I had said to her on a few occasions, on the count of one, I want you to move the story ahead to the next event.
We should have a few clips of those. I was wanting to ask you about that. But I think we can, we've got a few clips of that. You said that she was the perfect past life regressionist as far as, I mean, I listened to it. You did not lead her in any way. But as you said, you had prompt, you know, well, what's next or what's this. But I noticed that everything that she said came freely. There was nothing that would lead into, as we get into it, people can hear it. But everything that she said literally had to come from her own mind, because you were just asking her, well, what's next? What do you see?
Correct.
Is that, do you have to be very careful as far as when asking these questions to make sure they're in a just a questioning state without giving information yourself?
Correct. Or you don't want to, in other words, you don't want to lead the witness.
Right, yeah.
when you're doing forensic work, because this is what this is, doing forensic work, you need to ask the questions without leading the witness, because she's witnessing her own past life, but you don't want to put a spin on it.
Mm-hmm,
and so
mm-hmm.
The questions are, and you can ask a clarifying question, and I did do that on occasion. I asked her to look at her feet. She said boots. And I ask what color the boots are. But so I used the word boots after she had said the word boots. And then I said, how high are the boots? And she said ankle. Now, the boots could have been up to her knee, or they could have been mid-calf. But she said ankle. And I asked her, how are the shoes? Oh, do the boots have laces? Yes. What are they laced with? And it was black rope. And then I asked her what she had on her body, and she said a long skirt, and I asked the color. So in other words, I'm asking for details without leading the witness.
Yeah, here's the clip of that, actually. Let me play it really quickly.
I can't tell.
Like you can't tell. Okay, well, just go ahead now and just for a moment to look down at your feet. And when you look down at your feet, tell me what you notice. One.
Boots.
Boots.
Mm-hmm. And
okay.
Dirt.
Boots and dirt.
Mm-hmm.
And what color are the boots?
Black.
Okay. And how high up on your leg are the boots?
About ankle.
Okay. And how are the boots? Are they just pull-on boots, or are they other
lace.
Kind of boots? Pardon?
They're lace. Lace-up boots.
They're lace boots?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what are they laced with?
Just regular black rope.
Black rope. Okay. And what are you wearing on your body? Look at your legs. What do you have on your legs? One.
They're covered with a long skirt.
So that was the end of that excerpt.
Uh-huh.
What I noticed right off the bat, and I noticed this throughout the session, is like in that instance you asked, what do you notice about your feet, or what do you notice about your legs? I don't know that if I was not hypnotized, I would say my feet are big, you know.
Uh-huh.
I just found that interesting. What explain that clip to us?
Well, it's as excuse me. asking people what they're wearing helps us to orient herself in her own body, in that body, in that life.
Mm-hmm.
And it also helps us to determine what era it might be by what clothes are worn. So that's another reason to help them to look. And when I do the trance induction, I also do a lot of anchoring things to start that process of sensing. I have people, as I counted down, I said one, that's the trance induction. But then I also ask the person to notice themselves standing there. Notice I don't say where, I just say there. And then I tell the person, turn around in the opposite direction. And when they turn around in the opposite direction, they'll see themselves, and I will say whatever I want them to see, either a room or a staircase or a bridge across a creek, so that they're making a transition now from one place to another. That sets it up so that when you ask them to notice themselves in that body, in that lifetime, where there was an issue of fire and an issue of something around your neck, then that comes up without my needing to prompt. Does that make mm-hmm. sense?
Let me... I noticed that when y'all were discussing the boots, she said, my feet are cold. What was that? I mean, I kind of laughed at that because it was like, to me, I was like, my feet would be cold too if I was on the spot. But was there something, what was with that?
Well, the feet being cold, I did not pick up on that. And that's one of the things that I, you know, once in a while you don't pick up on something, and I needed to pick up on that. Her feet were cold, possibly because it was a cold day out, although she didn't indicate that. She was nervous and scared.
Mm-hmm.
She said she was nervous and scared. She was standing outside, and that's probably why her feet were cold.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could have been just a cold day. I'm not sure. And that would have been something that I needed to pick up on. It may or may not have been really significant about the total picture of the past life. And then she said, I asked what she was scared about, nervous and scared about. She said, being judged. I asked by whom, and she said, by peers, about what I did, that I did something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ask her, and sometimes I use a combination of focusing on something, but then sort of moving off intensity and then coming back to it. So I asked her to look straight ahead, and she could see a bank. I asked her to look to the right, and she could see a jail. Asked her to look left, and there was a church in the distance. So that was sort of like a distraction, but it also helps her to keep, again, grounding herself in that lifetime without going directly into anything traumatic. Because sometimes if they get into something traumatic too fast, they can pop out,
mm-hmm.
pop out of the lifetime. And so I wanted to make sure she was well grounded. And then she said, so then I went back to the scene. And what's happening now? What's going on now? Somebody holding my arms, one on either side. And it was two men, official looking. They had I asked them if they were wearing, she said they were official looking, and I asked her, how did she know they were official looking? She said by their demeanor. I kind of thought maybe that they might be official looking because of what they were wearing, but she just said their demeanor.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, when someone is doing a past life regression, I'm trying to see in my own mind's eye what they're seeing. I mean, is it? It sounds like it's a very fragmented, unclear experience. Or are there other people? Are there some people that just have just a perfect, crystal clear insight to it. I mean,
correct. Some people, it comes barreling out so fast I can hardly take notes. I mean, I can't keep up with my note taking. Some people just get little snippets here and there, and I need to ask quite a few questions. I would say it was kind of the middle of the road. It wasn't barreling out, but it also was not, there was questions, but yet sometimes it takes a lot of questions to get even the smallest picture. Here, the past life does not come back as watching a TV movie. It comes back in little snippets, senses. When I do past life regression for myself, I don't see a lot, but I sense a lot. I intuit a lot. I just know something, not knowing how I know it. But I also can see things as well. Some people just see everything. They can tell you the color and the smell they can practically give you the China pattern.
Huh.
And so it varies. Each person is different. And this being her first past life regression, I think she did an absolute phenomenal job of getting what she needed, which was to understand why she was afraid of fire and why she couldn't wear the material up above her collarbone. And the fact that she was able then to not be so anxious about leaving a candle burning in a room, even though logically she knew it was safe.
Sure. Okay, that's interesting information. We've got a few more clips here, so I'm just going to play them at random. This one's about a 2-minute and 20-second clip, so here goes.
Okay, so I'm going to count from 3 to 1, and when I say 1, the era, the place where this is taking place will come to mind, what part of the world you're in. 3, 2, 1.
In America.
Okay, where?
Someplace that gets cold.
Someplace where it gets cold?
In the winter.
Uh-huh. Pardon?
Forest around.
So where would that be? There's lots of places in the United States that get cold. In the 1800s, where would that be? One.
In Massachusetts, maybe.
Okay.
Or somewhere right in there, Midwest.
Yes. Well, that Massachusetts is on the East Coast. It's considered East Coast.
I keep seeing Massachusetts.
You keep seeing Massachusetts. Okay. That sounds right. And does an exact year come to mind, one?
1878.
Okay, and what is your official name, your birth name? One.
Madeline.
Okay, and are there other women in your community who do what you do?
Not really. They believe in it, but they don't do it.
Okay, they believe in it. Of course, the people who come to you do believe in it, or they wouldn't come to you. How many people came to you a day or a week?
It varies. Sometimes nobody, sometimes 10 a week.
Sometimes 10 a week?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that was interesting. I've got a couple questions off of that one, Doctor. First, I noticed that, as you had mentioned prior to this, the recurring theme of when you would ask a question, it would end with one.
Yes.
What,
well, it's a 3-2-1 countdown, or it's just saying one, because you're keeping the subconscious mind anchored on staying with the process. And also, when you say one, that also, because of my countdown, 5 to 1, keeps the trance induction there. So in other words, you're not only anchoring them to the story, you're also anchoring them to staying in the trance. No matter what comes up, you're anchoring them to stay in the trance.
That makes sense. Now, with that, what was interesting is we went and looked up the year 1878 in Massachusetts. And she apparently hesitated, but apparently Massachusetts didn't become a state till the following year, which could explain the hesitation, the lack of knowing.
Correct, but also remember Massachusetts was a colony.
So
even though it wasn't a state yet, it was a colony.
Right, but would her lack of... I guess what I'm trying to ask is, you know, when you're regressing, would you have a, like, when I hear her hesitation, I think what came to my mind is her consciousness, her current consciousness, trying to override what seems subconsciously impossible.
Correct. That can come in. It can come into the equation. Also, not wanting to be wrong. Nobody wants to be wrong. And so even though you're dealing with the subconscious mind, what comes through, you're still wanting to be make sure you're right,
mm-hmm.
even though the subconscious mind is doing it, doing the recall.
What happens when... I've got a few. This is a really interesting. What happens when? Are there timelines that are completely that you've never run across? Do people say, "I remember a past life," or "I remember 1,000 A.D.," or like 1,000 years ago? Do people come up with that? Do people remember past lives where they did not speak English?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. They didn't speak English. But here's one of the fascinating things that that comes up is the soul continues to hold on to the language, but they also progress and hold on to all the new languages that they learn. And I've even had someone start to speak a language I didn't understand, and I would just instruct them that they knew how to speak English and I didn't speak the language they were speaking. Would they please speak English? And sure enough, they can speak English. And I have a session that I've done with a soul that is, the body is still in gestation, and I talked to it when it was nine weeks old in gestation. And then I talked to it again when the body was 27 weeks old, and the difference between the two voices was significant when it talked, and it had learned a lot more English, and it had also learned a lot of Spanish in the meantime, interestingly, because the family speaks both English and Spanish. So there's that goes on, too. Now, I have not run into any entities that could not speak English, so I don't know if other therapists have. They may have. I know some of the accents are very pronounced, even though they're speaking English. They have a very pronounced accent or a brogue, depending on what lifetime they had before. I had one woman who said she couldn't understand why she hated eating ham sandwiches, and yet she ate ham sandwiches. Well, it turns out she had a past life where she died. She was eating a ham sandwich and choked. She was living alone, and had she been with somebody, she would have lived because someone would have done the Heimlich thing. But in that lifetime, they didn't probably have the Heimlich procedure. Anyway, she choked on the ham sandwich. in this life, she hated ham sandwiches.
That's incredible. A question came to mind, but that aspect of your work alone is absolutely incredible. To know that the woman that you did this current past regression with is actually her fear of fire has lessened. I mean, in my mind, in you know, the mainstream mind, you go, oh well, if you got a fear of XYZ, then you go to a psychologist, a psychiatrist, and you talk to them over and over and over again, and it's mind-boggling to myself that just within, I believe, the regression that we had with Shelley was about an hour long. And just with that length of time, her fear of fire has gone down. I find that incredible. How often does that happen?
It will diminish. It will continue to diminish. It takes, and I think as you might have noticed when I brought her out of the trance, there is an instruction, one coming up, allowing everything to assimilate in its own time, in its own pace. All the information that came to you is for your well-being and your healing. So that is an instruction that gets carried forward, that it will assimilate. Mm-hmm. The information will assimilate, and what healing needs to take place will take place. Now, one session may do it, and then sometimes people need more than one session.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Let's play another clip. This is Evil Deeds. This is a little bit longer clip. It's about 6 minutes, so we'll play it.
Okay.
And go from there.
Yes. All right. And how are you feeling?
Nervous, scared.
And what are you nervous and scared about?
Being judged.
And how are you being judged?
By peers.
About what?
That I did something.
Okay. And do you know what you did?
Uh-uh.
Okay, you did something, but you weren't expecting to be judged.
Right.
Okay. But now you're being judged. Are you inside or outside?
Outside.
Okay. And when you look around, what are you seeing?
People everywhere, kind of like a center. Square.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you see any buildings?
Just old buildings.
Mm-hmm. And when you look straight ahead, what do you see?
A bank.
Hmm. And when you look to your right, what do you see?
A jail.
Oh, a jail?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when you look to your left, what do you see?
A church a little bit in the distance.
Okay. All right. And when you look at the crowd, are you up higher than them or just on the same level as them?
At the same level.
Okay. And are you sitting or standing?
Standing.
Okay. And is there anybody beside you or are you standing alone in front of everybody?
Beside me, somebody holding my arms.
And when you notice who's holding your hand, they're holding your arms.
Official looking men.
Okay. And are there one man on either side or is there more?
one on either side.
Uh-huh. Okay, and when you say they are official looking, what makes them official looking?
Just their demeanor.
Hmm. Okay. And who's, is there anyone directly in front of you?
No, just a platform.
Okay. So everybody is just around you.
Right.
Are you standing on the ground or are you standing on something else?
On the ground.
Okay. All right, so when you look down at what you're wearing, are you male or female? One.
Female.
Okay. And how old are you?
20s, late 20s, early 30s.
20-something?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm going to count from 3 to 1, and when I say 1, I'm going to ask you to tune in and see what you're being judged about. Just listening to the conversation in the crowd. 3, 2, 1.
Evil.
Evil?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's evil?
Evil deeds.
Evil what?
Evil deeds.
Evil deeds. And
right.
What were the deeds? Yeah, and what were the deeds?
Poison.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Poison.
Poisons?
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're saying. What were the poisons?
Some type of mixtures. Elixirs?
Okay. And mixtures that you made or mixtures that you got from somebody else?
Mixtures that I made.
Okay. And what were these mixtures used for in general?
They were supposed to help.
Help what?
With illness.
Okay. And did you have a store or did you sell on the street or how did you?
People came to my house.
They came to your house?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So people heard about you and they came to your house?
Right.
Did anyone die because of your mixtures?
Yes, but it wasn't because of that. They just thought it was.
Yeah, it was because of whatever they had, right?
Right.
Okay, that was the end of that clip. Doctor, I noticed a lot of things that I found interesting. I want to back up. Like when she talked about the boots, she didn't say shoelaces, bootlaces. She said rope, lacing up her boots. That reminded me, like when I was listening to this clip, her answers. I was waiting. I was wanting to see how she would answer, how long it would take her to answer a question. And what really was surprising me is that when you would ask a question, the answer would immediately follow in quick order. That was, to me, surprising.
Well, it can take a while for something to come through, and other times it's just right there. So, yes, she was answering very quickly. That's why I said it was like an almost ideal past life regression. And I pause after each, and I repeat the answer. Mainly because if I repeat the answer, then they can expound on it because something else might have come through for them. So I'm anchoring what they said, and then I leave a little time between asking the next question so in case that something else comes through and they start reporting it that we're not talking over each other. So there's where, that's why there's those pauses between my getting the answer and then asking the next question. And I do a very slow kind of process so that they can feel comfortable. I don't want to pressure them.
Mm-hmm. What?
Like, you know, this is not a you're an exam or anything. Not being interrogated.
Right, right. When you're doing these past life regressions, like when you had mentioned earlier about the buildings that she had listed off, and
uh-huh.
I especially keyed into that when I was actually listening to the regression. It was just, for me, it was just sheer fascination to, you were trying, what you explained that you were trying to lock them, lock them into where they're at so they can better visualize it. But
uh-huh.
I could not help but wonder, I believe she listed off, out in the distance was a bank, and then to
mm-hmm.
the one side was a church, and to the other side was a jail. In these past life regression sessions, when you hear, are there Rosetta Stones, so to speak, or are there Rosetta Stones that literally decipher what's being said? Is there literal significance to some of these different aspects?
Oh yes, there certainly can be. It all, like I said earlier, it can give us an idea what the era is. It also can help them to go, if they want to go back to where they were. There's been many people who have had their past life regression and then gone back to the very place that they were at the time that the significance of this lifetime. Now, we just have one little day here. We have one, it's not even a full day. We just have a few minutes. She's giving us an event that took place. She's giving us a little history about what led up to her being in that position. But then there's all the other stuff around it. I didn't ask about any family, whether she had children. We did talk about her grandmother, and then, of course, we talked about a guy that she loved, but she never got married to him. And that was one of the things that she regretted, was that she had not married him.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just one little snippet. Now, if I were to do a second past life regression, we could go into this lifetime and expand on it, find out a lot more things. Her grandmother was the one who taught her to do what she was doing. And she was one of the people that was burned at the stake. Well, she wasn't burned at the stake, which is interesting, because by 1878, between 1878 and 1890, there were few burnings at the stake. Now, here they hanged her first, and then they burned the body afterwards to burn out the evil, that she had brought into the community. Evil spirits, I'm sure. And it was interesting. One fascinating thing was that her soul left the body and stayed to watch what was going on. It was hovering above, and the soul watched the fire, then build the fire, and then put the body on the fire, and the soul carried that as if it was still in the body, which I found interesting.
Is that something that happens normally? I mean, in other words, when I was listening to that in the interview, what I pictured in my mind's eye was someone that's talking about being operated on the operating room table, and they're above their body looking down at
uh-huh.
it. I mean, that's kind of what struck my mind. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, the soul did leave the body when she was hanged. Now, the soul could have jumped out of the body just before the hanging, or during the hanging, right after the hanging. I didn't get into when the soul left the body. And that would be something we could get into. after the second set, you know, during the second session.
Mm-hmm.
The soul did say they were cleansing the evil with the fire. And she said, they are seeing things wrong. The opposite is true. I came to help them, not hurt them. And then I asked her to go forward, and she has been reborn in 1920 to clear up unfinished business.
Let me play a couple of clips here.
Sure.
Because I actually have... I've got a clip here regarding – that's actually the last clip I have, the 1920s. But I've got one here, Defiance, and also one discussing the fire. So here is
okay.
The Defiant clip. Actually, I'll play the Defiant one, then we'll take a quick look at that. And then the Building the Fire is only about a minute long. So here's
okay.
The Defiant clip.
And how did you learn about these mixers and elixirs?
It ran through the family.
Uh-huh. It was passed down in the family. So who taught you, your mother or your grandmother?
My grandmother.
Uh-huh. Okay. And so you did not know, because this was a generational thing, that people thought you were evil.
Right. It was supposed to be for good.
Uh-huh. Well, that was your intent, and it was, for all intents and purposes, it was for good.
Right.
Okay, and so now they're judging you, and I'm going to ask you to move the story ahead to the next significant thing that came up that day. 3, 2, 1.
They're making me get up on the platform.
Get up on the platform?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Where's the platform?
In the center of town.
Okay. So these two big guys that are holding you by the arms, they're escorting you up on the platform.
Mm-hmm. And there's hundreds
okay.
of people watching.
Hundreds of people watching, okay. And how are you feeling?
Defiant.
Good. And anything else come up for the soul?
I'm watching them build a fire.
Okay. And where's the fire being built?
Right next to the podium.
Next to the podium, okay. And what's that about? Who's building the...
They think they're cleansing the evil.
Okay, they're cleansing the evil?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, those were actually two clips. One was the one where she's getting led up on the podium to be hanged, and then the second one was after the hanging as
right.
she was watching them build the fire.
Correct. And she was defiant, and rightfully so, because she said the people were yelling at her to atone for what she had done. And I asked her if she had atoned. I've made my peace. I didn't do anything wrong. And then I asked her if she would have atoned, what would have been the outcome? And she said it wouldn't make any difference.
Hmm.
So she was not going to atone for something that she had not done. She did not commit a crime. And so why atone for something that, even if she atoned, it wasn't going to change the outcome?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So for her soul, that was the right thing to do.
That's interesting. Let me ask you, I noticed, like when she went under, and you've been talking about, is there a conflict? Shelley apparently has said that she didn't feel like she was in a deep trance, but at the same time, the answers just flowed forward, and that, you know, it amazed her the answers that were coming out. And that brings to mind, you know, A, the question of what's happening there, but also, are there conflicts when under a trance, like she used the word elixir instead of medicine? So you literally talking funny. Is there a reason? How does that all work in someone's mind?
Well, again, she's using the language that was in that lifetime. She said mixtures, elixirs, those two words were the words that were used in those, in that era. And the people, the townspeople, were calling them poisons. So that's the first word she said, was poisons, evil deeds, and then poisons. Well, when I heard the word poisons, I knew that that's what she was being accused of, but I knew that isn't what she called it. And so that's why I asked her, what poisons were there? And she said mixtures and elixirs, and that's what they called it in that era. And people did come a lot for stomach illnesses and headaches. Interestingly enough, all diagnoses that we have in Western medicine nowadays is caused by emotional distress and dis-ease. Dis-ease, D-I-S hyphen E-A-S-E, not disease. The medical profession wants us to believe that there's these monsters out there in the sky that are going to sprinkle down on us and cause us to have all kinds of illnesses, from abdominal pain and everything, and to zits and everything in between, when in fact it's all dis-ease is created by emotional distress. Clear the emotional distress and the dis-ease that's diagnosed as some disease goes away automatically. That is metaphysical medicine, if you will. And the Chinese have practiced metaphysical medicine for eons, over 12,000 years. Western medicine is relatively new. It's barely 200 years old.
Allopathic, absolutely. I agree. In my studies of medicine, and I've done a lot of it, you know, I've had doctors laugh at me. You know, just a quick example, and I just want to throw this out there in regards to modern medicine. In some degrees, you have no other choice. When you wait to the last minute, you have no other choice because you're stuck in that paradigm. But I had a doctor laugh at me because I said, "No, honey works. You know, you can use honey on a wound and it'll help it heal." And this is just a interesting story. I had actually sliced my hand open really bad. It probably would have taken 20 stitches, and I sliced it open on rusty creosote-soaked steel. And within 15 minutes, it was swollen and it was hurting. And I just put honey on it, and I don't even have a scar from it. And I know
wow.
It would have. Yeah. But I had a doctor that was laughing at me and telling me what a kook I was over it. And it was like, well, I don't know. You would have given me a round of antibiotics, a tetanus shot, and everything under the sun. And then, you know, where still what it would be. But so, yeah, I'm in full agreement with that. We've got one more clip of her that I want to play in a minute from the 1920s.
Okay.
But I wanted to ask a question because you mentioned that the body trauma, even mental trauma, is obviously from mental issues or call it wounds of the heart.
Wounds of the heart and distress, yes.
Can you share with us, I mean, what are some of the success stories that you've seen from people that have gone through past life regressions, have you noted documented people that have had literal life-altering changes, movements towards the better, healing in this life?
Oh, I'm stopping to think. What is my most interesting situation? Well, this one that we have here is certainly a good example where, in one session, she is able to give herself permission to walk out of the room if a candle is burning, and that is in itself phenomenal. Because here she's been living her life how long, anxious about leaving the room when a candle is lit, and that causes her a lot of distress. The physical issues can be anything from hip injuries to, I had a hip injury in a previous lifetime, and lo and behold, this lifetime I had another hip injury and suffered with that hip injury for years and years and years. Now, it wasn't excruciating, but it was still there. And after doing past life regression and releasing the pain from the previous lifetime when I had a hip injury, this injury then, I could let go of more of the tension that I held in that hip. And it was amazing when I saw myself lying in the bed in that past life, knowing I had my hip was injured, it dawned on me, oh my gosh, I had a left hip injury in this lifetime. And was it a fluke that I had a hip injury? Because how the hip injury took place in this lifetime was slightly different but almost similar, because in the previous lifetime I was knocked off a horse by someone who wanted to kill me, and my hip was injured. This time I was riding a horse, and the horse fell on ice, and I was pinned under my leg was pinned under the horse for less than a minute before the horse got up, and the hip was rotated in the hip socket. So those kinds of stories, you say, oh my gosh, how can that be? But it was but that energy, you draw that energy to you because you're trying to fix everything in your life this time around, whether it's in a previous life or in this life. And so going back to a past life, to if you had pneumonia in this life, if you had cancer in this life, etc., those injuries could be brought in from a past life in a different way.
That strikes to mind. Do you ever have people that are trying to heal themselves due to bad karmic actions, bad actions that have caused themselves issues in this life?
Well, we certainly bring back patterns. They're simply patterns. And we call them good or bad because that's what the conscious mind does, or the linear world does to us. To the soul, it's just something we need to correct. To the ego mind, we call it good or bad. We call it good or evil. We call it right or wrong. But to the soul, it's, okay, I had that experience. Here's what it left behind, and I need to change that pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what going into a past life does for us, is to help us change the pattern. And here she was having the fear of something around her neck, having the fear of fire, because she wanted to get that energy shifted so that she can go on with her life without having fear, without having the anxiousness about the experience that she had before. And notice in the 1920s, she came back as a nurse, practitioner, and she helped people. No one has money for care. I try to help them as much as I can. They have no money. So she was actually working for very little money, helping people, even though they didn't have money to pay her. So she was wanting to right the wrong that she had experienced in that lifetime. Now, whether it was the lifetime just before the one in the 1920s, we didn't discover. That can be discovered. whether it was there was a lifetime in between or lifetimes in between.
Mm-hmm. Let's listen to the clip from the 1920s. It's the last clip. It's 4 minutes.
Okay.
1920.
Okay. What's that?
That's the year.
The year for what?
That I think I was reborn.
Uh-huh. Okay. And how do you, what are you sensing about yourself, one?
That I have unfinished business.
Uh-huh. And what's unfinished?
Back to healing again.
I'm sorry, say it again.
Back to healing.
Oh, you're back to healing again?
Mm-hmm.
And what are you doing this time around?
It's a few years later. There aren't many women doctors, but although I'm a nurse, I'm doing more of a doctor.
So you're being more like a nurse practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, where are you? What part of the world are you? One?
Chicago.
Okay. And what's the significant event that comes up? One?
The Depression.
Uh-huh.
And nobody has money for care.
Yes.
And I'm trying to help as many people as I can.
Okay. And what kind of care are they looking for now?
Just disease and injuries and, you know, hungry.
Oh, uh-huh.
But they have no money and nobody will help them.
Okay. All right, so you're helping as many people as you can, there's not enough money. How are you getting your supplies, one?
Donations.
Uh-huh, so you're appealing to the community to get donations?
Mm-hmm, and just using whatever resource I can.
Uh-huh.
Old cloth can be made into bandages.
Uh-huh.
And there's natural remedies that can be grown on plants.
Okay, so you're using a combination of both Western medicine and natural medicine.
Right.
Okay. And so what's the significant event that comes up, one?
There's just so much around, so much to be done. It consumes my life trying to take care of them.
Uh-huh. Do you have an infirmary, or do you just everybody just comes and then goes home?
I go more out on the streets.
Mm.
And help people.
I see. Okay. So let's move the story ahead.
And that's the end of that clip, Doctor.
Okay.
What are your thoughts?
Well, that's a typical session. We don't always go from one past life to another. But I just asked the question, and that's what came up, and so I just go with it. So it apparently needed to know that she had vindicated herself coming into another lifetime and helping people where she couldn't continue helping people before. And then I took her to the end of her lifetime, and she was 67 years old, Her son was there. Her grandchild was there. She had some kind of an illness, a blood disease. She was not in pain. She didn't have any regrets. She did miss her family, something that she was going to be, you know, when she crossed over, she was going to miss. So it was interesting also that she discovered that in this lifetime, the man who turned her in the lifetime where she was hanged, was her husband's friend in this lifetime.
Hmm.
So that's an interesting, and that's not unusual because we do come back as in soul groups.
Does that change?
Pardon?
Can let's say if you're, like, are you always stuck with the same soul group? Can you change?
Yeah, well, it's not a matter of being stuck with them. It's a, you have chosen to do that.
Uh-huh.
Many people come back with you for various reasons, or you invite them to come back with you for various reasons. For example, you will pick your own parents this time around for a specific reason, and the soul chooses to come back with you because it's the perfect dynamic that that each of you needs. So as your parents' son, you bring something to them that they need to learn from you, and vice versa, they bring something to you or some things to you that you need to get through, learn, etc. It's a perfect hand-in-glove situation, and sometimes the hand-in-glove is absolutely fascinating, and it's like, wow, how can we figure this out and do all this? But the soul has more intelligence, I think, than the ego mind. And I say that sparingly because we think we're so smart with the ego mind, and we're not as smart as we think we are.
Let me ask you, when I was listening to the regression, you threw out a few questions that they say got me laughing, because I was just like, where did these come from? But one example was, when you were asking her about the elixirs and mixers and what they were, you said, is Viagra, or were you giving Viagra?
Oh, yes, yes. I did toss that out there. She said she helped them with their love life. And so I tossed it out there like she had a potion, or if you will, a mixture, that would be the her era of Viagra. She didn't understand the word Viagra. Or I said, maybe did I say Cialis? I think I said Viagra. And
Viagra.
She didn't connect to that, so I let it go. I didn't want to confuse the situation, because sometimes when I toss something out like that, there is some recognition, because the soul does keep up with what is current in today's world. It didn't translate that in this particular situation, and that's okay. There's nothing right or wrong about it. It just was. So I let it go. But she did have some kind of an elixir or mixture that she used for people's love life.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably didn't have any side effects like what we have today from the pharmaceuticals, because none of that is natural. Anything that has a natural base to it, unless you happen to have an allergy to it, there are no side effects.
Mm-hmm. So in this past life regression with Shelley, you know, when she went into it, I was really shocked. She went into it believing that she could have been a witch, an official witch. And I thought, okay. But what she answered, the way she answered it really blew me away, is that she was basically an herbalist, a person that just knows what, you know, herb, this herb or that herb or this mixture can do for people. And so it blew me away in listening to it. It blew me away in that in real life, she's got a fear of things around her neck and has an innate fear of fire. And it was literally explained away. And then now to hear in follow-ups that she's doing better, I don't know about the neck issue, but apparently the fire issue is obviously improved. When you go into a session, how do you formulate how to, bring closure to the session? Because you had touched upon that, but how do you inject? Are you actually injecting it into the subconscious mind? You're going to think through this, you're going to expand on this, and you're going to learn to realize why you had, past tense, these issues. How is that done exactly? Can you walk me through the procedure of, I guess it would be called clearing someone's issues?
Well, it's a clearing of issues, but just the processing of what they experienced is the key. Everything needs to be processed in life, and we do process those things that we enjoy. The fun things that we do in life, we process, and that's good. The things that go on that are traumatic or troublesome, we don't process. Everybody kind of just walks around pretending like nothing's going on, and when you get hanged, obviously there's no way to get to be processed, and you bring it back into the next lifetime unless you're able to resolve it on the other side between lives. But when you come into this lifetime with something that's highly prominent, it is from a past life. It's just without question, if you go into a past life, you're going to find some piece of that. And it isn't necessarily all resolved just because of the... Well, let me rephrase that. It's resolved because of the past life regression, but it isn't resolved necessarily that particular day.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense. Now, notice that she has gotten some relief from the fear of fire, the fear of starting a fire, and she will get more as it continues to assimilate, the information continues to assimilate. Then other issues need to be processed on the subconscious level more. And she might need to process some of this more later on. I don't know if she's interested. We didn't discuss that. If she were my client, we would talk about it at the end of the session. Are you interested in maybe discovering more? Do you sense that you want to have time just to let it assimilate, and then we'll talk about it again? So there's a lot of combinations of ways that you can end the session and have good results.
That makes sense. When reincarnating, are people literally potentially brought back because someone else has an unresolved issue with you?
Yes, you could do that. You could choose to come back with someone else because they're in your soul group and you decide you're going to come back with them, but it's always a two-way street. If I come back with someone because they want me to come back with them and I agree to that, I will get something out of it too. I may know what I'm going to get out of it, I may not. Once I get here, it does disappear into the ethers for the most part because the Western world, but in other cultures, people pretty much know what they came here for. Here we deny it, we don't want to deal with it, we pretend, et cetera, et cetera. More and more people are recognizing that we did come here for a purpose, and I can distill that into a simple sentence. We came here for emotional and spiritual growth. The details is what we need to get in touch with. It's a given that we came here for emotional and spiritual growth. The details is what we need to get into.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yes. And, some of the people that we bring with us may appear only once or twice They may not be somebody that we even know well, but they appear when they need to appear. And how that takes place is phenomenal, but it does. We call it in. There's another phenomena that is I work with a lot, and that is having energy attachments that are energies similar to what would be called needed to be exorcised. You know, the exorcisms that went on, you know, the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And those energies need to be released, but those energies agreed to come. And the person literally calls them in, not realizing that they're calling them in.
So,
and they do serve a purpose, but then they can start causing havoc because the purpose has long been finished and that they're still using up the person's energy, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Now, you I get the impression that, are you able to do past life regressions on yourself?
An individual can get into a past life on their own by meditating. Sometimes the past life just blips through and you can process it. The degree to how much it can be processed is in each person is different. I think, though, that in order to get the full value of processing a past life, you do need to have a facilitator that can help. Ask
mm-hmm.
questions. Connect the dots between, okay, that and this that you're doing in this lifetime are the same. You need to let go of that. You need to process that. You need to confront. You need to confront somebody about something that you're continuing to allow to go on in this lifetime that went on in three lifetimes before.
Hmm.
Because we tend to carry patterns forward. For example, also, people have agreements with the soul. For example, you have an agreement that this person is going to treat you this way until you stand up to them. I had that agreement with my father in this lifetime. He was my husband in a previous lifetime. He threatened to abuse me, and he did abuse me once, but I threatened to expose him to the community. I felt very badly about that I had threatened him rather than standing up to him. So in my infinite wisdom, I thought, well, what a great way to assuage my guilt than to come back as his daughter and stand up to someone who's abusing me when I was a child. And so when I was 11 years old, I stood up to him when he threatened to abuse me one more time, and he never abused me again. He kept his agreement.
Wow. That's
and
impressive.
Now he's reincarnated as my oldest grandson.
that's interesting. That's treat him with love. Maybe he'll learn.
Treat them with love. We're all here to help one another. And I asked him why he wanted to incarnate as my grandson, and he wanted to be my son's son, and he wanted to be held by me and hear my voice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hmm. Would you be interested in taking a caller?
Sure, certainly.
Okay, this caller's from Phoenix, and we'll find out if Bethany's doing her job screening.
Okay.
Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Dr. Niedermeyer. I have a weird situation in that my past life, I believe, I was a black person. And I've said this to my family several times, and they just think it's hysterical. But I've had a real affinity for music, gospel music. I'm a musician. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know, I just feel really strongly that I was black at some point in my life.
Well, you certainly can find that out. And people do have that. It's similar to what Shelley had, and that was that she had a fear of fire, and she had nightmares of being burned.
Well, my feelings about being black are very positive, but
that's okay.
I do have some very strange family relationships, and so listening to your radio broadcast today made me wonder about some of the people I'm surrounded by, you know, that perhaps there's something there because there is a little bit of a persecution kind of thing with some family members. Mm. And I'm wondering if it might stem back from a different life now.
It could be. It certainly could be. Mm-hmm. The probability of it being from your soul group and you've come back together to work something out this time around is very high. I mean, it's probably slim to none that you weren't together before. There's an excellent book you might want to read.
Okay.
I know the author, and I highly recommend the book. It's called A Tribe Returned.
Okay.
And the author is Janet Cunningham.
All right.
And you can get it on
Amazon.
Yes, and you can get it on Amazon.com, and you can go on to her website, janetcunningham.com.
Okay.
And that's an excellent book. She writes about how we come back in soul groups and how we agree to meet up. And how that comes about is just, it can be so fascinating. It can be over a painting that you come together as a soul group.
Fascinating. Is it important to stand up to these people?
If that's what
you need to do?
You need to speak. You need to set your boundaries. So if there's persecution going on, or subtle or blatant, you need to set boundaries. And you might not be setting the boundaries as they need to be set.
I've been setting boundaries. However, because I'm really strongly religious, I do a lot of forgiving.
Well, okay, that's interesting because you need to set boundaries even though you forgive, but you also need to set boundaries.
I don't forget. You know, I don't put myself in situations to be hurt again. Sometimes you do because you're family members, you know?
Right.
But I work really hard to forgive so that I can move on. And
well, that may be the answer.
As an older person, I speak up and say, I don't agree with you. I'm not going to support that. So I do that.
Okay, that's setting a boundary.
Okay.
Did she answer your questions?
She did. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome.
I'm probably going to explore it. I'm really interested in being black, so I'm going to read your book and see what I can find out.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Dr. While we're on the subject, will you let people know right now how to get in touch with yourself and where they can find out more about your work?
Well, I have my website, drdorothy.net, the traditional 3 W's, Dr. D-R, Dorothy, D-O-R-O-T-H-Y.net. That's my website. And then, of course, I have many articles on the website, so you can just Google my name, Dorothy M. Nettermeyer, Ph.D., and you'll see a lot of articles written about topics on emotional and spiritual growth and how we come back here to solve issues. And Nettermeyer is spelled N-E-D-D-E-R-M-E-Y-E-R.
We've got another caller on the line, and I'll put him on here in a little bit. But I wanted to ask you a question that's been on my mind since the beginning of this interview. What are some of the reasons? I mean, does everyone come, when they want to do past life regression, do they always have, I've got issues, I want to resolve them? Or are there other reasons, like people want to have past life regressions?
Well, sometimes they want to know if they've had a past life with a certain person. Could be a family member. It could be a friend, husband, wife, children. So that's how, and that's easy enough to get into a past life because there is a thread. And we have a technique where we can take the person back to a lifetime that you shared with someone else, and it's actually foolproof. I've never had any difficulty getting someone into a past life. Just like I had said earlier, there was someone that I had had a past life with, and we met under professional circumstances, and he recognized me, thought he knew me in this lifetime, and didn't. And so I went into the past life just simply by recognizing his face and going back in time. And sure enough, I found him. There he was. And some similarities from one lifetime to another with regard to him. And when I called him and told him about it, he just laughed. He says, well, at least I'm consistent. Because he had the same color of eyes, was single, had never married. Same thing as the previous lifetime.
Amazing. I'm thinking, I just saw, I think it was, I like reading gossip news. I read real news, but I like reading the gossip news just because I end up shaking my head at the world as I pay attention to some of this stuff. But recently they just had an article. It was back east somewhere, East Coast, maybe Massachusetts, maybe New York, Boston or something. But it was a picture of a young man today posing in front of a picture from the, I believe it was the 15th century or 16th century, a long time ago. And they were literally identical. And it turns out that the kid in the photo that was posing in front of the painting, it turns out that his family was actually from the area of Italy where the painting was at. I don't know how many people out there have seen that. It's just, current gossip type news. But it struck me as, wow. I mean, they were identical. Same brow, same everything. Same eye color, same haircut, same beard, same body type, short and stocky. And so I guess my question is I love my multifold questions. One, how many times have you run across people that have generationally potentially characteristics like that can even be proven by photos? And then two, sometimes when people catch themselves looking in the mirror, they don't recognize themselves. They feel like something, they should look different.
Right. Well, you've asked a great question because there's a researcher who's done a lot of work on identifying people in this lifetime who had previous lifetimes in the revolutionary period, and Bill Clinton and Al Gore and Oprah Winfrey and Shirley MacLaine, just a whole host of people that we all know, and they have gotten photos of that previous lifetime during the revolutionary period, and then he has a photo of the person today. And he takes a picture, and then he puts the picture side by side, and the hairline, the eyebrows, the nose, the mouth, the jawline, everything. In fact, there's one guy who is his picture from his previous lifetime is so like he is today, you could not, if he didn't tell you that they were two different bodies and two different faces, you would think it was the same person. Just a different photo. It is uncanny. And the person who's doing the research is Dr. Walter Semkiw, S-E-M-K-I-W. He's a medical doctor. He works for Kaiser Permanente in California, and he's probably the most least likely person to do that kind of research, but he got a message to do it, and he was hounded until he finally did it, which is similar to Dr. Brian Weiss. When he wrote his book about Catherine, Many Lives, Many Masters, he worked with that client, Catherine, for several years, and he was hounded by his guides to write the book, and the rest is history. He teaches all over the world, and he lectures all over the world about past life and past life regression work. And so, yes, whenever I see myself in a past life, whether I'm male or female, I'm always slender. I'm about 5'5". When I'm male, I'm taller, 5'10", 5'11", slender. My hair color changes, my eye color changes, but sometimes some people come back with the same hairstyle, or not style, but color and color of eyes the same. So, yes, we do look a lot like ourselves from one lifetime to another. And Marilyn Monroe is another one that Dr. Semkiw has identified. Oh, no, it wasn't Dr. Semkiw, but he does have it on his website. Dr. Finkelstein in California was another psychiatrist who has done past life work. And Marilyn Monroe is one of the people that he has, and Jean Harlow are people that he has discovered the past life based on their life this time, and they look very similar.
Incredible.
Yes, it is.
Let's take this next call. It's a 326. Are you there?
I'm here. Hi, it's Sancho.
Is this Shelley?
Hi, Dr. It is Shelley.
Yes, hi, Shelley. Oh, hi, Shelley. How are you?
Well,
we've been
talking
about you.
I wanted to call in and tell you thank you.
You're welcome.
And that your methods have really helped.
Wonderful.
And I checked the coffee pot once, not four times.
Oh, great.
And I actually left a candle burning all day yesterday without checking on it.
Oh, you are so good.
So.
That's fantastic. And how do you feel now that you've done that?
Oh, much better. I think it resolves a lot of issues and a lot of questions I had.
Mm-hmm.
So it was definitely something that I would recommend people doing.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I'm glad you got relief that you wanted. And if you want to do more sessions, we can connect and do that.
Oh, definitely.
So I'm glad that you called in. Is there any other question you have?
No, I think I don't really have anything right now, but I would like to do another session at some point.
Okay, great. You know how to reach me.
And go back a little bit further. But that night I slept so well, I slept straight 12 hours.
Wow, that's great. So, fantastic.
Right.
That is wonderful. Well, of all the things that we talked about today, did you listen to the whole session or just part of it?
I've listened to the majority of it.
Okay. Did you have any questions about what we said?
No, actually, it was pretty clear, and I missed the first 15 minutes.
Okay.
But everything made perfect sense, and everything that you said, it really came together.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. Well, that's wonderful that you can have it for posterity.
Right.
Shelley, let me ask you, have you had... I'm thinking through this. Have you had flashbacks? Have you had waking dreams? Have you had has there been anything strange that's happened since the actual regression session?
There's been a few things that have been a little bit more clarification to you. Like when she had asked about, the family around, I lived alone in the 1870s, and it was, more of a clarification of what my house looked like and what I was surrounded by.
Huh.
So some of that, when you went into when you were in the regression itself, you felt that you were just confirming what you already knew.
Right. It was a little bit different than what I thought, but it was, along the same lines.
Uh-huh. Good. Well, maybe it was just expanding on what you're, getting a little more clarity to what you knew.
Right.
Yes.
Right. So, it bled over into this lifetime, too, being in the medical field for a few years.
Yes, it certainly did. Well, and then the 1920s, too.
Right. So.
Right.
Maybe that's my purpose.
Absolutely. You're here to help people, and maybe you'll do something that validates that even at a different level.
Right.
Have you found yourself, Shelley, have you found yourself wanting to go further? I don't recall what you do currently, but have you found yourself wanting to, I assume not in the medical, have you found yourself wanting to go more into a medical direction now?
I've always been interested in the medical. So it's with me a little bit hard to go further into it because I don't know if I could deal with losing a patient or, not being able to help someone with, the way things are nowadays.
Hmm.
That there's just, if you have somebody coming in from a terrible car crash.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing you can do is offer comfort. So I just don't know in this lifetime if I could handle doing it.
Sure. Well, Shelley, do you have any more questions for Dr. Niedermeyer? Or, Doctor, do you have anything?
No, I'm so glad
I just,
to be...
One at a time.
Go right ahead.
I enjoyed working with you, and I've enjoyed talking about the session, and I really appreciate your willingness to do it.
Right. And I just wanted to say thank you, because it did clarify a lot for me.
Good.
And it, you know, opened up a lot of things of why I feel certain ways towards certain people or certain things.
Wonderful. Getting to that, just knowing that is gives you peace of mind.
Right, exactly. Exactly. It makes things with a little more sense now. Why, you know, why I was uncomfortable around my husband's friends.
Correct.
So, and, you know, when he had never done anything in his lifetime to make me uncomfortable, but yet I was.
Well, now you know, and that's the key to a lot of things. Just knowing why gives you
right.
the peace of mind that you need versus having to do something drastic.
Right.
Okay. Well, thanks for calling in, Shelley.
Thank you, Sancho, and thank you, Doctor, once again.
You're certainly welcome.
And hopefully I'll see you soon.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Doctor, let me ask you, something that came to mind. Do you ever have, in these past life regressions, do you ever have people discover that they've left themselves something from a previous life?
I'm not quite sure on what you're left themselves something. What does that mean?
A family heirloom. Let's say there's a old pocket watch. Have you ever had someone that says, well, yes, I actually left that to my son, which I knew. In other words, in their previous lives, do you ever have people that recall leaving themselves through family a family heirloom for them to later regain?
Later discover?
Yes.
I personally have not had that in any of my sessions, but I have read about it, and it is obviously fascinating. And I'm trying to think. I think it was in the book, now I'm blanking on the name of it. It's written by a woman in England. Her name is... I'm drawing a blank this morning.
But there is a book that documents the basic scenario.
It documents the basic scenario of her... she actually met her children from a previous lifetime. Jenny Cockle. Jenny Cockle, J-E-N-N-Y, Cockle, C-O-C-K-L-E. She met her children, some of her children from a previous lifetime.
So she
died at a young age and left her children. I can't remember how many. I think she had something like 8 children. And she died young, and then she reincarnated. Actually, she was from England or Scotland, and then she reincarnated in England. And she had a lot of memory bleeding through. She drew a picture of the church. She drew a picture of the road that she used to walk on. She did go back to where the birth, her place was. She found her old house. She found the rabbit hutch that was in the backyard. She had several items that she thought her oldest son would remember from his lifetime as a child. And he remembered, I think, all of them but one that she made a list of. He made a list of things that he remembered from his previous lifetime, and then they matched up the list. And there were a lot of lapover things that she remembered that he had on his list and vice versa that she remembered and he remembered. Didn't have on his list, but he remembered them.
That's
so
incredible.
That's pretty fascinating. And the name, you'll need to Google her name, Jenny Cockle, past life. I can't remember the book offhand. It's been a while since I've thought of it.
So it sounds like you helped Shelley quite a bit. I'm really impressed with that. I, you know, to hear the follow-up that, you know, she's sleeping, she's able to leave candles alone. It literally blows me away. It's mind-boggling. How many sessions does it take, or can it take? I mean, do some people get everything resolved in a single session, or is there a kind of a standard number that people generally, you know, gravitate towards, or?
No, you can be one, like a, it can be one session, and you can get a lot resolved in one session. You may get some clarity, but not resolve anything. There's a, it's just a combination of things. The total number often is dependent on how much the person wants to know about a particular lifetime or how many lifetimes. I've done 10 of my lifetimes, and I don't remember how many times I went into each one of those lifetimes to resolve issues, but they all have a domino effect. They were all had threads between the lifetimes plus a thread to this lifetime. And since I'm in this field, I wanted to do as much as my work as I had time for, so to speak. I could do more, I'm sure. I haven't done any past life work for myself for a while. But it really is up to the person. Now, I will make a recommendation to people. I think this issue needs to be addressed more thoroughly than what we've been able to do in this session, whether it's the first or the third session. And then the person has the choice of saying, yes, I want to follow up, or no, I don't. There's no requirement. It's what the person wants.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, we've got about 9 minutes left, and I'm curious, you know, when someone, you actually can do phone regressions, but how do people go out and seek out past regression, past life regression practitioners?
That's an excellent question, and it's a very important question, because there's a lot of hypnotherapists who bill themselves as past life therapists, and they're not trained to do the forensic work, to ask the questions, to follow up on questions, to process it, et cetera. They just take them into a past life, and whatever comes out, that's what comes out, and then, then it'll just solve itself. Well, that's not true. It doesn't just solve itself, because if it could just solve itself, it would have been solved before.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't have brought it back this lifetime. The best way, I'll give you a website. It's IBRT.org, and that stands for International Board for Regression Therapists. It is a certification board that certifies people in past life regression work, and there's a very stringent requirement before you can get your certification, and I do have my certification in past life regression work. That's the only place that I would recommend to go to find a certified past life regression therapist. And I have had people tell me that they have gone to several past life therapists and have not gotten even into a past life, or they did get into a past life, but the practitioner did not know how to expand on what they're hearing from the client, so the client believes that they didn't get into a past life when in fact they did. I have a lot of those clients that come to me, and I get them into a past life, process it, and everything works. So go to IBRT.org.
Let me ask you, I'm really curious about this. Have you ever had anyone that regresses to a famous past life, say a president or a baseball player or a war hero?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, there's several of those stories written, and they're in books. There's one famous one that is I have followed, and it is a young boy who his story has been on. In fact, there's going to be a TV program for him on A&E in the next few weeks. I don't have the date yet. He's a little boy that was shot down in World War II and has reincarnated this lifetime around, and his whole sole purpose, sole survivor, is to tell us about past life, and his story is phenomenal. The name of the book is Soul Survivor, S-O-U-L, The Reincarnation of a World War II Fighter Pilot, and it's written by his parents because he was too young to write the book. And I just got a note from his dad the other day that he's going to be on A&E soon, and he said he'd let me know when the date is. So check with the A&E, and you'll see it. And the last name is Leininger, L-E-I-N-I-N-G-E-R. Bruce and Andrea are the parents, and the little boy's name is James.
Incredible. Let me ask you.
I don't know how old he is now. Let me think. He must be 13, 14 by now.
And he still recalls.
He did. The research that his father did is phenomenal, to the degree that the young boy met one of the World War II pilots at one of their reunions. They were walking down the hall in the hotel, and the pilot, the World War II pilot, was walking toward him. He stopped, knowing that James was going to be there, and he said, "You must be James." "Yes." And they chatted for a few minutes, and then the parents said, "Do you know who that is?" And he named him just by it. And he said, the parents said to him, "How do you know his name?" "By his voice."
Wow. That's incredible.
That is incredible. And he also met his sister in that past life, and his sister confirmed, "Yes, you are the incarnation of my brother."
Incredible.
He knew things about her life that no one knew. Things like pictures and things they did that he told her, and she said, "Yes, that's true. That's true." So
amazing.
It's an excellent book for people to read. And the author, it was co-authored with Ken Gross. And Bruce and Andrea gave him the details, and he wrote the story.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
One last question. We've got a few minutes left. Do you ever have people who recall past lives? Is it possible to be an animal, maybe a dog, a cat, horse?
I have not heard written. There's not anything written in that I've gotten a hold of in the United States. But I did have a client who believed that she was a lizard at one time, and then had incarnated, and now is in human form. The lizard was the only thing that came up between being an animal and then being in human form. There may have been other lives in between. And I only did, I think, two sessions with her, and then she didn't continue.
That's incredible.
That's
so there at least is a documented case.
Well, there is one that did come through that way, and I don't refute it because who am I to say?
Sure. Okay, we're basically out of time, Doctor. So people know how to get in touch with you. Will you give us your contact information and where people can find you once again, please?
Sure. Yes, certainly. Dr. Dorothy, DrDorothy, at drdorothy.net. My website is drdorothy.net, and my phone number is 480-794-1561. And
great.
I do phone sessions all over the world. If it's out of country, I do Skype, and my Skype name is Dorothy Ned, N-E-D.
Great. Doctor, I want to thank you for coming on the show again and doing that regression with Shelley that has apparently helped her immensely. So,
yes, it has.
You're a wonderful woman, and I appreciate your work. So
thank you very much, and thank you for having me. I've enjoyed doing it this way. This is the first time that I've talked about past life regression and having it a session and then talking about it afterwards.
Well, great.
That's exciting.
All right, we're the first one.
Thank you so much. Yes, you are.
Thank you, Doctor. You have a wonderful day.
You're welcome.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right, folks, that is it for the day. Thank you for listening to the program. Just stay tuned to thunderstruckradio.com for upcoming shows. Again, that was Dr. Dorothy Niedermeyer, and I really appreciate the effort that she helped put into the show today. So, really incredible. We'll catch you on the flip side, folks. Have a great day.
Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my daughter just texted me some emojis, and I'm confused.
Can you describe them?
There's t-shirts, shorts, dollar signs, bunch of clapping hands.
She's saying go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, right now new summer styles are up to 50% off store-wide, with tees from $6 for adults and $5 for kids, and shorts from $12.
Up to 50% off?
Yes, plus all clearance styles are up to 75% off at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
Now that I understand, I'm going to Old Navy now.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 7/11 to 7/23, select styles only. Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my daughter just texted me some emojis, and I'm confused.
Can you describe them?
There's t-shirts, shorts, dollar signs, bunch of clapping hands.
She's saying go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, right now new summer styles are up to 50% off store-wide, with tees from $6 for adults and $5 for kids, and shorts from $12.
Up to 50% off?
Yes, plus all clearance styles are up to 75% off at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
Now that I understand, I'm going to Old Navy now.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 7/11 to 7/23, select styles only.